Whenever I hear Edward Phillips playing his resonator slide guitar, I get hungry for low country cooking. If you want to hear more of Edward's Delta Blues, go to his YouTube channel. Just type in at Edward Phillips Roots. That's at Edward Phillips Roots. So sit back and relax. We're coming up with Cornbread and Buttermilk's podcast. For now, enjoy Edward's slide guitar. Welcome to the Cornbread and Buttermilk Podcast. We are podcasting from the Southern Appalachian foothills from our Brook Park studio in the beautiful city of Canton, Georgia. The Cornbread and Buttermilk Podcast is where we discuss the culinary uniqueness of the Deep South. Our mission is to explore the culinary origins of the Southern kitchen while sharing our passion for recipes from the Southern agrarian past. We bring stories, recipes, book reviews, and tips from the Kitchen Gardener. Okay, I hope everybody's having a good week. And Buttermilk, how about you? Do you have a good week so far?
I did. We're back here in our studio in Canton, Georgia. We had a good week. Today was special. We took the day off and went with some very special family friends that we've known for decades now, up to Chatsworth, Georgia, for dinner. We ate it at Edna's, which is one of maybe three restaurants along the highway there. But Edna's is special because it's what we call a meat and three, or a meat and two, in the South. So we had a good country meal. We both had fried chicken and fried okra. What did you have?
I had a real Southern dinner. I had fried chicken, fried okra. I had candied yams, cornbread, of course, and sweet iced tea. And for dessert, I had coconut meringue pie.
Yeah, that was
homemade coconut meringue pie.
Yes, if you make it to Edna's, and we hope you do, we're going to give you the address. You want to save room if you possibly can for dessert. They have great pies. I don't remember any cakes being mentioned, but they did have a variety. I had chocolate pie, and I was telling Cornbread that I didn't think Miss Alberta would have approved of the amount of food I left on my plate in order to get to that chocolate pie, but it was also a meringue pie and well worth the calories. It was delicious. They have peanut butter pie, chocolate pie, coconut, meringue pie. Those are the ones that come to mind. They may have more. I don't remember apple or cherry or anything.
No, that was it, I think, when I saw they had coconut pie. I knew what I was going to get. But, Edna's Restaurant, that's at 1300 Highway 411 South on Chatsworth, Georgia, zip code 30705. And if you're lucky enough to get Karen as your server, give her a good tip because she's really good. And she kept our tea glasses and our Coke glasses filled, got her food out to us, and it was warm.
So, and if you have any trouble finding Edna's based on the coordinates, you can just look for all the sheriff's cars that'll be in the parking lot. I think when we got there, there were probably six sheriff cruisers in the parking lot. And sure enough, they were all inside eating lunch at Edna's. So that's a recommendation right there. I'm guessing they probably eat there every day. And now Edna's is open on Sundays.
Yeah. And I felt well protected there with the police force, and I didn't feel like there would be any problems. We had a good ride in the country on our way back home.
Yeah, we've had a break from this rough weather the last couple of weeks. Today was close to 70 degrees and just blue skies, and it was just a treat to get out and ride around with our friends the Hesters and go out to dinner, and we really enjoyed it. I think I we should mention that when we say dinner in the South, what we really mean, or what really used to be lunchtime, or is now lunchtime, used to be dinner. For many decades in the past, people took time out of their day, regardless of what they were doing, whether they were working on the farm or they were working in a law office or a bank. They took time out of the middle of the day to have dinner, go home and have dinner. And then supper was at nighttime, and it was a lighter fare. Your big meal of the day was at noontime, and it was called dinner.
Well, you know, like I say, we've had a good week. The weather let up. We got to walk 5 days this week, didn't we?
4 days.
4 days, okay. But you know, we didn't finish up last time talking about our books that we were reviewing. And so we thought that, you know, once we got in today, we would try to wrap up some of the books that we had in mind. Last time was that Buttermilk had mentioned Edna Lewis's book, and we talked about how she didn't like to use store-bought baking soda, so she made her own. And I actually looked back in Libby's book and got that recipe for you. It's 1/4 cream of tartar to 2 tablespoons of baking soda. Sift all the ingredients together 3 times and transfer it to a clean container and seal it tight in a jar. And keep it out of the sunlight and at room temperature, and it'll keep for you for up to 6 weeks. So there you have it. Miss Lewis's great recipe for making homemade baking soda, or baking powder, rather. So anything you want to add to that on your Edna Lewis report, or where were you at with your book reports?
My foraging in the Southern cookbook arena. I wanted to mention just a couple of books to add to my mention last week of Edna Lewis's book, along with Scott Peacock, Fanny Flagg, Natalie Dupree. I wanted to mention the Southern Foodways Alliance Community Cookbook, and that's a mouthful. This is a great book. It is hardback, but has spiral binding. And the reason for that is that the Southern Foodways Alliance doesn't believe that cookbooks are really authentic unless they are spiral bound. They're not to be trusted unless they're spiral bound.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah. The book was edited by Sarah Rowan and John T. Edge. John T. Edge was one of the founding members of the Southern Foodways Alliance. There's a dedication by none other than Eudora Welty of Jackson, Mississippi. There's also a foreword by Alton Brown, who we all know from the Food Network. And this book is encyclopedic. It's only about, I don't know, maybe 200 pages long. And it is, like I said, hardbound with, you know, it's spiral bound. It's easy to get through, but it is just encyclopedic in its knowledge. They asked all sorts of regional chefs and writers across the South to contribute recipes, and some are very specific to micro regions in the South, Cajun cooking or low country cooking or things that you might not find in other cookbooks. The Southern Foodways Alliance, which from here on out will be known as the SFA, was founded in 1999 in order to document, study, and celebrate diverse food cultures of the changing American South. They have recorded more than 500 oral histories from cooks and chefs. They have made more than 25 short films about the Southern food culture, and they also publish books and magazines, and in addition to that, they stage 6 to 8 events a year. Membership in the SFA is open to anyone, regardless of geographic status, and no matter what her biscuit technique. So okay. They're very open-minded. And finally, even if, bless your heart, you put sugar in your grits. So you can be a member of the SFA if you so desire. You can look them up online. It's a great organization.
Okay. Well, I'll let you rest your voice a minute while I'll talk about one of the books that I was going to talk about last week that we kind of ran out of time.
But sure.
Southern food, I think when you're talking about stuff that the more authentic it gets, then you're talking about something that's been utilized for, you know, over 200 years. And one of those items of raw material that is used in Southern cooking is fat. And a lot of people given fat a bad rap. I think more and more people are starting to find out that it's the trans fats that were bad, and the fats from animals, especially if you're talking about grass-fed, grass-raised cattle, hogs that eat a more natural diet, is really not bad, and it's actually good for you. As we were talking last week, I think Olivia mentioned that I make my own butter, and I do use natural grass-raised milk that's not been, you know, given antibiotics and hormones. I make my own butter using my KitchenAid mixer. This book that I want to mention, the name of the book is Fat, F-A-T, and the author is Jennifer McLagan. If you turn to page 21 of that book, it'll show you how to make homemade butter. If you follow her instructions, then you'll be sure to make some good, healthy butter for you and your family.
It's actually easier than you might think.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And then if you get adventurous, go to page 21, and she'll teach you how to make rum butter for a special treat. Yeah, and that's just one of many. I mean, you can mix herbs into your butter. You can put honey into your butter. You can get as creative as you want to. And there may be some experimentation, but you may end up with a whole new culinary treat. It's not that difficult. It's something that's kind of fun to do, and to be able to tell people, you know, that sit down to dinner with you that, yeah, I made that butter fresh.
It would make a good gift.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My mother actually churned butter as a child, and I was talking to my brother the other day, and I said, do you know where Mom's old butter mold is? And he said, yes, it's over here. You know, we got it down. And it actually, it's wooden. It's a wooden round mold that was carved out of wood. Part of it was turned on a lathe, I think. I'm talking about turned on a lathe probably over 150 years ago. So it was an antique when she had it, and it probably was something her grandmother had. But it had a carved floral motif in the top stamping portion of it. So I thought it'd be, it had a little crack in it from 100 years of sitting around. And so I repaired it, and so I've got it ready. So my next batch of butter, I'm actually going to stamp it out with her butter mold, so that'll be a big treat. Back to Jennifer McLagan's book, Fat, on page 21 through page 27. She talks about butter all through there, and like I say, I think 27 was where the rum butter formula was. If you like to bake flaky biscuits, flaky pie crust, then you might want to consider turning to page 70 of that same book, How to Make Your Own Lard. And she discusses leaf lard, which is the comes from the fat around the hog's kidneys, which renders the purest, whitest lard. And that's the creme de la creme of their lard family. And they use it just specifically for very special treats. Page 73 and 75, Jennifer discusses the process of rendering lard and mentions that it can be frozen. And that was something that I'd always kind of wondered. And I'd wondered this with butter, too, which, you know, now if I made it and made up a larger batch than what I was going to use in the next week, then could I freeze it? And apparently you can. Her book has over 100 recipes where she uses lard. Something that was worth experimenting with and trying to get back in and find some of the uses for it. Some of the best chefs actually make their own lard. Some of the chefs I've read about in the Atlanta area and Savannah and Charleston render their lard for special treats that they make.
And that's it.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Our friends at Farm Fresh Beef are having a spring sale on their sides of beef and pork. Cornbread and Buttermilk love their steaks and bacon. Farm Fresh Beef is raised in the USA and LJ, Georgia, without hormones or antibiotics, and their steaks are the best I've ever had. Their applewood and hickory smoked bacon will make your mouth water, and that's a guarantee right there. So, call Robin Solomon with any questions you might have at 770-781-4563. That's Robin Solomon. And her number again is 770-781-4563. And that's at Farm Fresh Beef. And they're in Ball Ground, Georgia.
A hardbound cookbook. It's actually got a beautiful cover, and it's part of a series.
Yeah, she's written a series of books, and she wrote one called Bones, which she talks about the use of bones and cooking. There's a big difference between cooking a piece of meat with a bone in and cooking a piece of meat without the bone in. The marrow of the bone is a fat, and that's something that attributes to the flavor of the food. Some people just buy bones from the butcher and put it in a pot with their soup and stews, and maybe very little meat on the bone, but what they're going for is the flavor imparted from the marrow of the bone. And of course, a lot of people have heard of bone broth, which is basically a process of rendering the fat from the marrow into a broth. Which they use.
What's the third one in the series?
The third one in the series is called Bitter.
Right.
And right. Bitter.
And each of these are hardbound books, beautiful hardbound books.
Yeah, really beautiful books, yeah. Bitter talks about a whole family of different plants that have a bitter taste to them.
Yeah.
One of the first ones that we actually used ourselves was radicchio. It's an Italian name, and it's used quite a bit in Italy. One of the names that Southern cooks may know it by is chicory, and it's from the chicory family. Chicory all have a sort of a bitter taste to them. But what I found when I heard that, I thought, well, I don't think I'd like it because of the bitter taste. But I looked up some recipes, and I thought, well, I'll try this. And what I found was I could cook it on the grill, and I usually cut it into wedges and cook it on the Blackstone. And if I serve it grilled with honey drizzled over it. And usually when I cook it, at the same time when I'm cooking it on the grill, I put a little salt, a little pepper. I smother it with olive oil and flip it back and forth on the wedge side onto the griddle until it's a little, wilty looking. On there with it, I put a handful of raisins and a handful of pine nuts. You can buy them in most stores and bags, but I just roast those a little bit, and then when I serve the radicchio or chicory, I put it on a plate separate and sort of serve it as a side dish with the raisins, which sort of plump up from heating them on the grill, and the roasted pine nuts. They're really, really delicious. You don't even notice them as being bitter when you the honey. Just the honey, the salt, it's just a combination of all those flavors that's really good. But chicory has been around and has been a predominant herb used in New Orleans. They even grind up chicory roots and put it into coffee. If anyone's ever had Louisiana coffee, they know what that tastes like. That's kind of covers those two things. Now, one other book that I ran across was, it's really a children's book, and it's not so much a cookbook, but it's an introduction for children to vegetables, and it's called Mr. Okra. Mr. Okra sells fruits and vegetables, and it's about a produce peddler in New Orleans who drives his colorfully painted truck through the neighborhoods calling out that he has okra and eggplants and all the other vegetables that he might have that day. It's a very nicely illustrated book. So I was thinking that would be a great book for bedtime stories for children. And they recommend it for children between 6 and 8 years old.
That would be a great introduction to go into the farmer's market to take a look at some of those vegetables.
LaShawn Daly is the author's name. My grandfather sold produce from the back of a truck. And I had an uncle also who had a neighborhood route, and he sold produce. So it was something that when I was growing up that you used to see. I don't know, maybe in some neighborhoods and in cities they continue to do that.
Well, I think there are a lot of local. I know the city of Canton has a local farmers market. A lot of Roswell does, Alpharetta does, Jasper does. Most of them are on Saturday mornings or maybe one evening during the week. But they have a wide variety of vegetables that would go along with that book and might make for a good field trip.
Yeah. Last year when the Canton market was open and full swing, and what was it, during the summer when we went through there?
It was, yeah. I think it's runs, you know, most of these farmers markets run from May through early October. Yeah, yeah. They seem to have a variety of arts and crafts, as well as, you know, like you said, honey, in addition to raw fruits and vegetables that you might see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was a young lady there I bought eggs from.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I bought a dozen double-yolked eggs. She guaranteed every one of them to be double-yolked, and they were enormous. And, and it was like you really didn't, for two people, you were pushed to eat everything that came from two eggs. You know, I cracked two eggs and scrambled them for buttermilk and I, and we both ate them. But by the time we added some toast with it and a couple of strips of bacon, it was more than enough.
Well, we're not going to keep y'all too much longer. We just wanted to talk about, I had one more cookbook, and that was, this one is different. It's written by one of my favorite Southern authors. It's called The Pat Conroy Cookbook, Recipes and Stories of My Life. Every chapter in the book begins with a story, and it, to be honest, is not strictly a Southern cookbook. Pat Conroy, before he wrote The Prince of Tides or The Great Santini, was able to write some of his best books, Southern books, in cities all over the world. So the book includes stories and recipes from the Left Bank of Paris, Rome, Italy, Bangkok, and then in this country, New York, San Francisco, and New Orleans. So lots of not just strictly Southern recipes, but then there's also shrimp and grits and sweet potato rolls and peppered peaches. And one of the sayings in the book that I love, that I guess we'll end this episode with, is one from the book, and it says, "A recipe is a story that ends with a good meal." And I love that. Yeah. I think that's really sums it up. He had quite an appetite. If you ever, you know, had a chance to see a picture of him, it was clear that he enjoyed his pony enough to a Southern table. So,
yeah, and he lived not far from Charleston, so he was certainly near some really good restaurants and some, and could avail himself to some of that good low country cooking.
Yeah,
and low country cooking is some of the best cooking that you can find. We both have a fondness for she crab soup and crab cakes and shrimp and grits.
So next week, I think we're going to follow up and do, since Valentine's Day is around the corner, I think next week we're going to do a special Valentine's Day podcast. I'm not sure. We haven't really gotten down to talking about what that will involve, but please stay tuned. It's sure to be popular.
Okay. Well, Buttermilk, I'm certainly glad that we got to record again, and I hope everybody has a good week ahead of them. And if you would, as we always say, we'd appreciate it if you would share our podcast with a friend or a neighbor or a family member. And if you think they would like it and benefit from it, then that's one of the best things you could do to keep us coming back for more and with more book reviews and recipes and information about Southern cooking. And hopefully that we'll get to come back next week with some interesting stories for Valentine for you.
Yeah. All right, Cornbread. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Buttermilk.
We'll see y'all next week. Take care. Have a good one.
Yes, have a good one, and God bless you.
Next time you're cooking shrimp and grits, tune in Edward Phillips on YouTube. Go to at Edward Phillips Roots. That's at Edward Phillips Roots. You'll enjoy his music. You'll enjoy the Delta blues played as you've never heard them played before.